Good morning. My name is Felicia, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Sequel Communications earnings call for the second quarter of 2011. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a questions and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. I would now like to turn the conference over to Pete Able, Senior Vice President of Corporate Communications. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you. Good morning and welcome to this discussion of the second quarter 2011 results for Sequel Communications Holdings One, LLC, and its subsidiaries, which do business as Suddenlink Communications. Before we get started this morning, we would like to remind you that certain statements made during this conference call might be considered forward-looking statements within the meaning of the Private Securities Litigation Act of 1995. Those statements are subject to the various risks and uncertainties described in our annual and quarterly reports, which are posted to our website. These risks and uncertainties could cause actual future results to differ materially from the results expressed or implied by any forward-looking statements made on this call. The information discussed today will be based on our quarterly earnings release for the period ended June 30th, 2011. Both our earnings release and quarterly report have been posted to the Investor Relations section of our website at suddenlink.com. The release compares actual and pro forma financial and operating results for the second quarter and first 6 months of 2011 and 2010. Today, our presenters will focus their comments on year-over-year pro forma results for the second quarter. With that, I'll now turn the call over to our CEO, Jerry Kent. Jerry?
Thanks, Pete, and good morning, everyone. Thanks for your time and interest in Sequel Communications. We really sincerely appreciate it. In the second quarter of 2011, we remained in outstanding financial condition and continued to deliver a consistently strong financial performance, including our 19th consecutive quarter of pro forma revenue growth. That's no small achievement considering the persistent challenges in the larger economy. Furthermore, our financial results continue to be among the very best in the industry. Pro forma revenue in the second quarter totaled $482 million, a 7.2% increase over the same quarter last year. Second quarter adjusted EBITDA was approximately $179.4 million, a 8.7% increase over the year-ago period. EBITDA before one-time expenses related to the NPG integration was $184.1 million, representing a 10.5% increase over the year-ago period. Revenue-generating units, or RGUs, now total more than 3.3 million. An increase of over 190,000 in the trailing 12 months, representing 6.1% pro forma annual growth. As you may recall, the first quarter of this year was our second best quarter ever in terms of RGU growth. We did give back some of that growth in the second quarter due largely to seasonal factors, a transition period for the NPG properties we acquired on April 1st, a challenging economy, and a strategic decision to maintain and grow average revenue per unit, or ARPU. In previous years, the seasonality of our business in the second quarter has been driven by college students disconnecting service as they headed home for the summer. This year, however, that trend was intensified by retirees and other second homeowners leaving their winter homes in Arizona for the summer. Recall that the majority of the former NPG customers, or approximately 70% of them located in Arizona. Furthermore, we completed the transition of those properties onto our backbone, billing, and other platforms in late July. Accordingly, for the entire second quarter, we were limited in our ability to market to these customers on our platform and under the Suddenlink name. In short, the expected seasonal downturn in these markets was compounded by limited marketing due to the migration and integration work. The good news is that we successfully completed the migration, and with the NPG properties now fully transitioned to our platforms, we've been able to turn up marketing in these areas, and we're seeing better RGU trends early in the third quarter than these areas have seen in the prior 2 years. In our cable systems, excluding the NPG cable properties, we were essentially flat in RGU growth. The second quarter of 2011 was weaker than the comparable period in 2010, but very similar to the comparable period in 2009. It is clear that the economy impacted us in the second quarter this year, and our emphasis on avoiding deep discounting to focus on ARPU affected our unit growth. Our ARPU in the second quarter this year was $124.74, which was up 10.4% over ARPU in the second quarter last year. Our ARPU performance has contributed to our robust revenue growth, and there were no rate increases during the second quarter. At June 30th, we had approximately $98.7 million in cash and cash equivalents on hand, with no current plans to draw on our $200 million revolver, leaving us with solid liquidity. Free cash flow was positive $11.8 million in the second quarter this year, compared to negative free cash flow of $4.3 million in the second quarter last year. We continue to expect that we will be free cash flow positive in 2011. Our total leverage at June 30th was 5.47 times EBITDA. Net of all cash, our leverage at June 30 was 5.37 times EBITDA. As noted previously, our track record of solid performance and our roadmap for growth give us confidence that we should be able to steadily reduce leverage in the months to come. We're also making excellent use of our capital resources and continue to expect significant return on the infrastructure upgrades we're making through Project Imagine. When Project Imagine is completed next year, high-definition or HD service should be available to substantially all our customers, with an average of 90 HD channels on our lineup and the capacity in most areas for up to 200 HD channels. Furthermore, video on demand and DOCSIS 3.0 broadband technology should be available to well over 90% of our customers. From late 2009 through June 30 this year, we had invested nearly 71% of the approximately $350 million we committed for Project Imagine and success-based capital. By the end of this year, we should be more than 80% complete with Project Imagine. As we near the completion of this initiative, the declining CapEx spend and increased revenue should result in further expansion of margins and growth in free cash flow. Tom will provide more details momentarily about where we stand with Project Imagine. We continue to market compelling bundled offerings, which lead to longer customer relationships and make our customers less vulnerable to competitive offers and churn. We grew total bundled customers 7.1% in the trailing 12 months, and we grew triple play customers, which have the lowest churn of all customers, 2.4% during the second quarter and a robust 18.1% in the trailing 12 months. As a result, 22.1% of our customer relationships were in a triple play bundle as of June 30th, up from 18.8% in the year ago period. Residential customer relationships in our properties, including NPG, grew by almost 5,000 homes in the trailing 12 months. And we're achieving noteworthy growth in other lines of businesses that we not reflect in our RGU results, namely our residential security, wireless home networking, and commercial lines of businesses. We grew home security customers by 11.1% in the second quarter and by more than 5,500 units in the trailing 12 months. Importantly, across the markets where we sell our home security service, we estimate that we are second only to ADT in market share. In our wireless home networking business, we grew customers 13.8% in the second quarter and more than 52,000 units, or 169%, in the trailing 12 months. Notably, we have more than doubled the take rate for this service. At June 30th this year, 27.4% of new Suddenlink customers taking data service also took our wireless home networking service, compared to only 12.8% at June 30th last year. Now, innovation is critical in today's rapidly changing environment, and that's why we'll continue developing services such as wireless home networking and home security. We believe these and other innovations will contribute to our future growth while enhancing the value of our brand and service among existing customers. We're also looking to stay ahead of the curve as consumer interest in online video increases. To that end, we are prioritizing development initiatives that will give customers the ability to access video remotely and help ensure that we're engaged with those customers across multiple platforms. As you may recall, we announced earlier this year the launch of HBO's authenticated online video destinations. For no additional charge, these services provide Suddenlink customers who already subscribe to HBO and Cinemax access to the corresponding online video content anytime they want it on any computer, iPhone, or iPad in the U.S. with a high-speed internet connection. Then in June, we launched Suddenlink To Go. In addition to HBO and Cinemax content, this service features popular shows from TBS, TNT, True TV, and Cartoon Network for no additional charge to customers who subscribe to the corresponding Suddenlink TV services. All told, Suddenlink To Go offers our customers tens of thousands of full-length TV episodes and shorter video clips, plus more than 1,300 movies. Our commitment to innovation in this area continued last month, when Suddenlink was announced as one of only six companies and the only mid-sized cable operator in the group to offer its customers the opportunity to stream CNN and headline news live on iPhones and iPads if they subscribe to those services as part of a traditional cable TV package. We believe initiatives like these can help us maintain and improve customer satisfaction. With the enhanced network infrastructure that we're developing through Project Imagine, we're well positioned to capitalize on these points of competitive differentiation. Looking beyond residential services, our commercial organization maintained its momentum in the second quarter, gaining share in both internet and phone services. Importantly, as of June 30th this year, commercial video, data, phone, and carrier revenues accounted for more than 11.2% of all Suddenlink revenues, up from 10.4% at June 30th last year. Furthermore, commercial services are the fastest growing segment of our company, with revenues up 15.6% in the trailing 12 months. We estimate the total small and medium-sized business market is more than $870 million in our service areas. While we have a relatively small share of that market today, there is tremendous upside potential, and we believe our business class internet and phone services position us very well to compete and gain share in this very important area. Meanwhile, our carrier business saw ongoing demand from wireless carriers that need higher bandwidth connectivity between cell towers and central offices. Tom will provide additional perspective on the segment of our business in his remarks today, but I will note that our customer growth in both carrier and commercial continues to be the best in our history. In closing, we believe we're in excellent position to build on our momentum and expect to drive further growth in residential and commercial services, revenues, and EBITDA this year. And I'll turn the floor over to Tom McMillan, our Chief Operating Officer, to provide additional perspective on Project Imagine and our operating achievements in the second quarter. Tom.
Great. Thanks, Jerry. I'd now like to expand on some of the operating results that Jerry touched on using the pro forma comparisons included in the earnings release. On that basis, as Jerry noted, we added more than 190,000 RGUs in the trailing 12 months. On basic video, we ended the second quarter with approximately 1.27 million customers, a 3% decline since the year-ago period. Basic penetration of estimated homes passed at June 30 was 43.7%. On digital video, we ended the quarter with more than 732,000 customers, up 6,200 units in the quarter, and nearly 93,000 units, or 14.5% growth, in the trailing 12 months. Digital penetration of basic video customers at the end of the quarter was 57.5%, up from 48.7% a year ago. Along with our growth in digital video, we added nearly 48,000 DVR customers over the last 12 months, an annual growth rate of 15.5%. DVR penetration of digital customers grew to 48.5%. Looking at our success in HD, we added more than 98,000 HD customers over the last 12 months, representing 32% annual growth and bringing HD penetration of digital customers to 55.5%, up from 48.1% a year ago. Our sell-in rate of HD to new digital customers has improved to 64% during the second quarter. Total penetration of advanced digital services, either DVR or HD customers, stood at 58.4% of digital customers at the end of the second quarter 2011, up from 52% at the end of the second quarter 2010. On high-speed internet, we finished the quarter with more than 914,000 residential customers, up nearly 69,000 units or 8.2% since June 2010. As a result, residential data penetration was 32.3% of estimated data homes passed, up from 30.4% a year ago. Second quarter unit activity was impacted by expected seasonality, particularly in the former MPG service areas, coupled with economic weakness as evidenced by the weaker year-over-year performance for our lowest speed internet service. On telephony, we finished the quarter with nearly 410,000 residential customers, up more than 12,000 units during the quarter and more than 68,000 units or 20.1% since the year ago period. As a result, residential telephony penetration at June 30 was 17.6%, meaning we served slightly more than 1 in 6 of the estimated telephony-capable homes we passed. At June 30 this year, total customer relationships were up nearly 5,000 in the trailing 12 months, with lower margin video customer losses being more than offset by a net gain of some 33,000 non-video higher margin customers. Notably, we gained nearly 4,300 or 15.2% more non-video customer relationships in the trailing 12 months ended June 30 of this year versus last year. And we gained 27% more non-video customer relationships during the second quarter this year than during the second quarter last year. Turning to our commercial business, we had another strong quarter, gaining approximately 1,000 commercial internet customers and 1,500 commercial phone customers during the quarter. At June 30, our 44,400 commercial internet customers represented an 8.8% increase over the past 12 months, while our 15,100 commercial phone customers represented a 73.6% increase over the year-ago period. We're proud of our market share gains in the small to medium business sector and are optimistic that we will continue to gain share. We've also continued to see very robust growth in our business of providing fiber to the tower for cellular carriers. As noted during our last call, this segment offers a great market opportunity with up to 3,000 addressable towers in our footprint. Today, we have over 260 tenants installed, approximately 230 more tenants in the process of being installed, and proposals outstanding for over 350 additional tenants. Many of the initial anchor tenants that we have sold are co-located with other tenants on the same tower. We estimate there are between 1.5 and 2 tenants per tower for the towers that we have in billing and backlog today, representing an opportunity to leverage our investment to serve these additional co-located tenants. What's more, several of our anchor tenants have exceeded their initial capacity needs and have purchased additional bandwidth from us. Finally, today, I want to comment briefly on our progress in the second quarter on Project Imagine. We continue to be extremely excited about this 3-year initiative, with which we are now more than 70% complete. When all phases are concluded in 2012, this plan will help reshape our company for the future and further improve customers' experience with Suddenlink. In the second quarter, we continued distributing digital adapters to customers that we can transition to all digital lineups, reclaim bandwidth, and add even more services. Through June 30, we had installed over 900,000 digital adapters in more than 50 cable systems. Furthermore, we had achieved the following Project Imagine milestones as of June 30. DOCSIS 3.0 technology was deployed to cable systems serving 77% of customers. So far this year, we have launched over our 50 meg and 100 meg services in nearly a dozen additional markets. Video on demand service was available to more than 78% of basic video customers. On demand content features more than 8,000 titles, including more than 800 HD titles, and we recently doubled the capacity of our VOD platform from 10,000 to 20,000 total hours of content. Customer VOD streams in June were 4.2 million, nearly double the number of streams in June of last year. Access to high-definition services was at 93%, and our weighted average number of HD channels was at 66, with several markets providing 90 or more HD channels. Our current lineup of HD services has increased dramatically from the 24 HD channels we offered, on average, before the start of Project Imagine. Beyond Project Imagine, we have continued to expand the availability of Suddenlink TiVo Premier DVR service, with deployments now underway in additional areas beyond West Texas. As a reminder, this partnership combines our video service with TiVo's best-in-class user interface to offer access to thousands of hours of entertainment choices, including content from Suddenlink's video on demand library and the web, all accessible through TiVo's advanced search and discovery features. Other features include the ability to schedule recordings from locations outside the home through a web-connected computer or smartphone device. More recently, in June, an iPad app was launched that's compatible with Suddenlink TiVo devices, followed in July by an app for the iPhone and the iPod. Using these apps, Suddenlink customers who have integrated Suddenlink TiVo devices can effectively use their iPads, iPods, and iPhones as advanced remote controls to change channels, browse video content, and even comment on their favorite shows through Facebook and Twitter without interrupting what they're watching. Thank you for your time. I'd now like to turn things over to our CFO, Mary Medusky, for a closer look at our financial results during the quarter. Mary?
Thanks, Tom, and good morning. Today I will discuss the financial results for Sequel Communications Holdings 1 and subsidiaries for the second quarter of 2011, adding to what Jerry and Tom have already provided. I'll also discuss our balance sheet and liquidity position. As noted, I'll focus my comments on pro forma second quarter year-over-year results, drawing on our quarterly report and earnings release. Our quarterly report is available on our website. For the bank lenders listening to this call, our first lien lender package, which covers Sequel Communications LLC and subsidiaries, has been posted to Intralinks, including a copy of our compliance certificate. As expected, we were in compliance with all of our bank covenants at June 30, 2011, all with significant cushion. The pro forma information we discussed today includes the MPG acquisition completed on April 1st this year, as well as the cable system we acquired in August 2010, and it excludes the two small non-strategic cable systems we disposed of in November 2010, as if those transactions had all been consummated on January 1st, 2010. At June 30, our total debt outstanding was approximately $3.79 billion, comprised of $1.825 billion of 8.625% senior notes at Sequel Communications Holdings 1, $1.952 billion face amount of first lien term loans at Sequel Communications LLC, and $13.6 million of capital leases and other obligations at Sequel Communications LLC. We also have a $200 million undrawn revolver, fully available except for $12.6 million of outstanding letters of credit. At June 30, we had approximately $98.7 million of cash on hand and interest rate hedges in place covering $1.75 billion, or nearly 90% of our funded bank debt. The weighted average duration of our swap portfolio was reduced to approximately 9 months at June 30th. Of note, we have $400 million notional amount of swaps maturing in October 2011, $950 million maturing in April 2012, and $400 million maturing in October 2012. Our weighted average cost of funded debt, including the senior notes, was approximately 7.68% at June 30. Our total leverage, as calculated in accordance with our credit agreements, was 5.47 times at June 30. Our leverage net of all cash was 5.37 times. Now for a few comments on our second quarter financial results, pro forma for acquisitions and divestitures. As Jerry mentioned, total revenue for the second quarter of 2011 was $482 million, representing growth of 7.2% or $32.4 million, over the second quarter 2010. ARPU was $124.74, an increase of 10.4% over the second quarter 2010. Our increase in revenue for the second quarter 2011 versus the second quarter 2010 was largely attributable to an increase in the trailing 12 months in our number of new telephone, high-speed internet, and digital video customers, an increase in the penetration of existing customers for those services, video and high-speed internet rate increases, and incremental video revenues from video on demand, high-definition television, and digital video recorder services as more customers purchased advanced video services from us. Offsetting this growth in part was a decrease due to the impact of bundling and promotional discounts and a decline in basic video customers, including seasonal losses in the recently acquired MPG properties, which were compounded by the limitations to marketing in those properties under the Suddenlink brand until the integration and billing conversions were completed in July 2011. Video service revenues increased 1.9%, primarily due to basic video rate increases, increased pay-per-view and VOD service revenues, and customer growth in our digital and advanced video services, offset in part by a lower number of basic video customers and digital customers purchasing fewer digital tiers of service on average in the trailing 12 months. High-speed internet service revenues increased 12.5% due to an increase in residential high-speed internet customers in the trailing 12 months, the impact of rate increases, an increased proportion of customers taking our higher speed, higher price tiers, and the growth in commercial high-speed internet services to small and medium-sized businesses in the trailing 12 months. Telephone service revenues increased 21.7%, primarily due to an increase in residential telephone customers and growth in our commercial telephone services to small and medium-sized businesses in the trailing 12 months. Advertising revenues increased 0.4%, largely due to higher local and national ad sales revenues from the automotive sector, offset in part by lower political ad sales revenue. Excluding the impact of declining political revenue, advertising revenue would have increased 6.7%. Other revenue increased 11.8% due to the increased rental of high-definition and DVR-capable converters, increased home networking revenue, increased administration fees associated with the underlying growth of our business, higher franchise fees consistent with video revenue increases, and higher broadcast retransmission fee pass-throughs, offset by lower shopping channel revenue. Our commercial lines of business, embedded in the consolidated results described above and in the press release, are comprised of commercial and bulk video, commercial high-speed internet, on- and off-net carrier sales, and commercial telephone. Our commercial business saw strong growth in the second quarter. Commercial revenues totaled $64.1 million, or 11.2% of total revenue in the second quarter of 2011, representing growth of 15.6% versus the second quarter of 2010. Furthermore, commercial data and telephone lines of business grew 25.2% year-over-year on a combined basis. Operating costs and expenses rose 6.4%, primarily due to higher programming costs and retransmission consent expenses, increased net compensation and employee-related costs, including contract labor and higher fuel expenses. In addition, the second quarter of 2011 includes approximately $4.7 million of non-recurring expenses associated with the integration of MPG, primarily consisting of contract termination charges, severance, billing and telephone platform conversion expenses, plus other diligence and transaction-related expenses. Adjusted EBITDA, as defined in our earnings release for the second quarter 2011, was $179.4 million, an increase of 8.7% from the same quarter last year, resulting in an adjusted EBITDA margin of 37.2% versus 36.7% in the year-ago period. Excluding one-time expenses associated with the NPG transition, our adjusted EBITDA margin would have increased further to 38.2% versus 37.1% in the year-ago period, and our adjusted EBITDA growth rate, as Jerry mentioned, would have been 10.5%. Income from operations for the second quarter 2011 was $73 million, an increase of 11.8% over the same period last year due to revenue increases outpacing operating costs and expense increases and due to decreases in non-cash share-based compensation expenses. Net loss was $42,000 for the second quarter 2011 compared to a net loss of $38.3 million for the second quarter 2010 when we incurred debt extinguishment and swap breakage costs. Second quarter 2011 capital expenditures were approximately $94.5 million. That figure includes Project Imagine and success-based capital of approximately $28.9 million. We now expect capital expenditures for all of 2011 to be between $360 and $370 million, including $25 million to $30 million of CapEx associated with the NPG properties. Our CapEx guidance for Suddenlink, excluding the NPG properties, has not changed. Year-to-date, through June 30, 2011, we have spent $199.6 million in total capital expenditures. As Jerry mentioned, free cash flow in the second quarter was positive, $11.8 million, compared to negative free cash flow of $4.3 million for the same period last year. This improvement is due to enhanced operating results, offset in part by increases in cash interest expense. We expect to be free cash flow positive for the full year 2011. In addition, we expect our free cash flow to increase as EBITDA grows, Project Imagine nears completion, and our interest rate swaps roll off. I'll now conclude my remarks and turn the call back over to the operator to facilitate questions. I would like to remind everyone that this is a public call and we will generally refrain from discussing information other than what is disclosed in our earnings release and annual report. Operator?
If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, that is star, then the number one for any questions. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of Bishop Teen with Wells Fargo.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for the detailed and very thorough update. First, just a quick housekeeping question. Have you filed or made public a pro forma for NPG and the other divestitures acquisitions for the full year 2010?
So we did provide for 2010 in an 8K that was filed some weeks ago our 2010 results for NPG as if we had owned NPG.
Okay, I'll have to find that. I went and looked, couldn't find it on your. So I'll loop back to you.
And Bishop, right. That's available on our website as well.
Okay, I missed it. I'll find it. So just three quick questions. Let me billboard them for you. Your preferred stock redemptions, any colors you're thinking about 2013 maturities? I know that's a tough week to talk about refinancing. And the Imagine CapEx spent so far, if you mentioned it in your update, I missed it.
So I think, Bishop, you asked three questions. The first was, what are the plans around our the remaining preferred equity that we have? What are our plans around our bank maturity in 2013? And how much of the Project Imagine capital have we spent since inception? Is that what you asked?
Yes, Mary. Oh. You never miss a thing.
So the amount of the preferred that we now have is $96 million. We have no current plans to do anything with that preferred. In the distribution in January, as you recall, we repaid the original investment of that preferred. In regard to our bank loan maturity, you are right. Our term loan matures in November 2013, and so we will be opportunistic in, you know, in the period of time between now and then to look at refinancing options. We're confident that there will be refinancing options at the time that makes sense for us to refinance. And regarding Project Imagine, since its inception in the fourth quarter of 2009, we've spent about 71% of the $350 million budget.
Okay.
And that is...
That's great. I will pass it along. Thank you very much.
All right.
Your next question comes from the line of Mike Pace with J.P. Morgan.
Hi, thank you. A couple questions. Can I just drill down on the high-speed data units? I understand the seasonality with the acquisition, but can you give us what the net adds were, I guess, for the core SQL business, excluding NPG, so we can just look at that versus last year? And then can you also discuss how you're doing targeting non-video customers for high-speed data or telephony or that dual-play bundle? And then I have a couple follow-ups.
Sure, Mike. Our core properties, excluding NPG, for the second quarter, internet, we lost about 2,000 internet customers, residential. We gained about 1,000 commercial. So if we reported like other MSOs who include commercial, we would have had a net loss of about 1,000. Now, that compares to, in 2010, which is a record year for us, we gained 3,000 in the second quarter, and in 2009, we gained 1,700. So clearly, we have high seasonality in the second quarter due to a large proportion of our locations being in college and university towns. So we had a small net loss. A couple of things to mention there. One, we do think the economy has certainly impacted subscriber growth. And it's really interesting. Through April, we were still having on pace with our record year of last year across all RGU segments. And at the start of May, it's like somebody flipped a switch. And I talked to other operators, and they saw similar things. And May and June were just very, very weak. And one of the things that we did is we were focused on maximizing our ARPU, and so we were trying to stay away from deep discounting. And we had, as you've seen, we had very good ARPU growth, and across all RGU segments, we exceeded our own internal budgets on every single one with ARPU. If we were to go back and do a critical look at what we did, well, if we had it to do over, one thing we would have done is probably discount more on our slowest speed service in HSI. So if you looked at the makeup of our loss, we actually gained in all of our upper tiers significantly. The entire loss was solely attributable to our slow speed. And what happened is, as the economy soured, we saw a number of our competitors who were having success with $15 DSL, slow speed. And we did not respond, one could say maybe not quickly enough, but we didn't do it. But, our higher tier speeds are still doing extraordinarily well. And since then, we have responded with some other offers to try to strengthen our competitive positioning on the slow speed. But, you know, maybe we did it a month or two too late.
Oh, can you just talk about, yeah.
So second question, Mike, this is Tom, I think was around how we're targeting DBS customers for internet and phone. Is that right?
Yes.
Yep. So generally at this point, using traditional means, really segmenting those customers out through our databases, and looking at the propensity of those customers and using mainly direct mail to reach those customers. And as you can tell by our results, having gained 5,000 customer relationships over the last 12 months, we're obviously having some success in attracting those customers.
Okay, and then while we're just on high-speed data, can you also talk about the early success that you have had with DOCSIS 3.0, just the type of demand that you're seeing there and the price points?
Well, so as we launched DOCSIS 3.0, we launched 20 meg service as well as then either 50 or 107 meg service. As Jerry mentioned, in the second quarter, you know, the uptick in our customers versus prior year really was in our higher speed services. So we are seeing some migration, albeit smaller numbers still. We are seeing some migration of customers up into those higher speeds, and we certainly, you know, well, this time last year, many of those services didn't exist. So we've added, you know, thousands of customers into those service categories in the second quarter.
Well, I think it's also the fact that DOCSIS 3.0 has made it much more simple and facilitated three different times that we've increased speeds for our customers without charging additional amounts. And we think that's why, you know, if you look over our last year, actually several years of internet growth, growing our customer base has been wildly successful.
And we did that for, we did that for the former MPG customers upon our network migrations in July of this year.
Great. And then finally, and I promise I'll be done after this, can you just give us a little bit of a look, and I mean a very general look at how the first 5 or 6 weeks of the third quarter are shaping up on a year-over-year basis in terms of just units?
Sure. July was weak. I would say an improvement over May and June, but still a little weak. And knock on wood, right now as we look out at our pendings and all, it's looking very similar to last year. So I'm not making a prediction going forward, because obviously the third quarter is so much dependent upon how we do in our fall and back to school, which it really hasn't hit yet. But so far, right now, we're behaving more like last year, and hopefully we've settled out and it's behind us. But again, I'm not making a prediction that that's what's going to happen.
Great. Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Jason Kim with Secus.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for taking my questions. When I look at your SG&A costs, and if I strip out the some, you know, one-time non-recurring items, both in the first quarter of this year and the second quarter, SG&A actually went down quarter over quarter from 1Q to 2Q, despite you adding MPG to your family of businesses. Can you just talk about that, and you know, how sustainable is the pace of margin expansion that you've been experiencing so far this year?
You're asking why SG&A has gone down first quarter versus second quarter?
So if I look at SG&A excluding stock-based compensation in the first quarter, it was about $100 million, which included about $3 million of MPG-related, the one-time comp expense.
Yep.
And then the second quarter, SG&A, again, excluding stock-based comp, was, you know, again, just over $100 million, which I think presumably includes some of the integration expenses you pointed out for MPG integration.
Well, the MPG integration expenses are one-time expenses.
Right, right.
Below the line. So that, you know, that's not relevant to the quarter over the preceding quarter results.
Okay. And so going forward then, you know, so despite adding MPG to the overall business, so the SG&A can remain relatively stable because of some of the synergies you can achieve. Is that the right way to look at it?
I think the way to look at it, and we have said, during the Project Imagine years, with an increase in labor related to the activities around Project Imagine, we saw, you know, our EBITDA margins being held back a bit. But we have said, you know, over time that we will expect, and we do expect, margin enhancement as we continue to enjoy operating efficiencies as we put more product, you know, through our organization. So it is our expectation that we would increase EBITDA margins, and we have in fact seen that in the year-over-year basis, whether you look at that before or after the one-time expenses.
Got it. And then just one, you know, final question for Jerry. Regarding M&A, I couldn't help but notice that Sequel's name really, you know, really has not come up in the press reports as a formal bidder for Insight, which again, according to the news articles recently, it ended this auction process for now. I presume there's a right price for everything, but if you can kind of, you know, remind us with some broad commentary on the differences between MPG, which obviously an asset that you liked and acquired, versus some of the other properties that you saw in the market in the marketplace out there.
Let me just be pretty general here, because I don't think that we want to set a precedent of talking specifically about unique characteristics of deals that may or may not have happened, and particularly those that may not have happened. But when we look at acquisitions, there's several things that are important to us, and one is that we see significant upside potential and have value creation in any acquisition we would consummate. It also, we like to see characteristics that are similar to ours. So, for example, we have about 7% of our homes passed where there is a telco overbuild. We like operating in those properties. We think it's a lower risk proposition, and we see significant growth enhancement. So we'd like to see characteristics that's similar to that. We have been experiencing virtually industry-leading growth in RGUs, revenues, and EBITDA for several years now. And we want to make sure that any acquisition that we would consummate, we feel would add to our ability to generate those type of results. And so we would expect to see significant upside in those in any acquisition. And so NPG, we think that now that we're through the migration, we think it has some under-penetrated services. And there were some synergies with a couple larger systems that we will be able to interconnect with ours. And there is no telco overbuild in any of the NPG properties. And so we thought it was a good strategic fit for us, and that's why we went after it.
Got it. Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from the line of David Phipps with Citigroup.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. Most of them have been answered. Can you tell me a little bit about when some of these interest rate swaps roll off and how we should think about that? Because it's currently over 5, and I guess some of them roll off in the fourth quarter here. How do we look through that for modeling purposes? And then what would you expect the run rate CapEx to be after we get past Project Imagine?
Regarding the swaps,
mm-hmm.
$400 million of them, notional amount, roll off in October 2011.
Took about a quarter.
I'll give you the exact amount.
Sure.
$400 million in October 2012.
Okay.
At a swap rate just north of 5.2% or thereabouts. All our swaps are in that range.
Okay.
$950 million in April 2012. And the final $400 million in October 2012, at which time we will not have any swaps on our books.
The first amount you mentioned was October of 11, right?
11. Yeah.
October 11, okay.
Sorry,
and
October 11, April of 12,
yep.
October of 12.
And is there, what do you think about swaps at this time in the market?
I think rates are really low, and, you know, swaps, you know, as Ben represented to us, swaps and caps look pretty attractive. We haven't made any decisions on what our future plans will be in that regard, but we see that rates are at historic lows.
Fair enough. That's all my questions. Thank you.
And you also asked about run rate CapEx, and we don't provide forward-looking guidance, but we see no reason why, upon the conclusion of Project Imagine, our CapEx as a percent of revenue would not normalize and be consistent with what our other MSO peers are experiencing.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one. Your next question comes from the line of Dave Sherrod with Barclays.
Sure, taking the question. If I could just ask on the commercial side and the growth you're seeing there, if you could just give us an update in terms of more recent trends and if you've seen any slowdown in growth there, given some of the economic weakness you mentioned on the residential trends, starting to slow down in May and June. Have you seen that on the commercial side as well as you track over the last few months and into July?
We have not seen a slowdown in demand for internet and data, and carrier for that matter.
That's good. That's good to hear. And on the size of the customers that you're targeting, is there any change in terms of trying to target larger customers or different services that you're adding as you target commercial customers?
Yeah, I mean we did in the last 12 months add PRI services to our telephone offering. We also offer some GPON product as well, and so we are having opportunity to the extent it exists in the kinds of markets we serve to offer services to more enterprise-like customers.
So, for example, we used our own PRI to connect our call centers,
right,
which are fairly sizable organizations, and that's we can now target those size of organizations.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Kevin C. Graves with Fort Washington.
Hi, thanks. I just want to follow up on Jason's question about the MPG cost. I mean, it's not big dollar amounts, but I just want to make sure I understand that. I thought the disclosure in the financials you filed this morning said that those MPG one-time costs were actually there were some in operating and some in SG&A, but then I thought I heard Mary just say they were below the line, so I was confused on that.
For our bank reporting purposes, they're below the line.
Okay. But when you look at the numbers in the filing, the $101 million of SG&A that's in the filing, that's including the MPG integration one-time cost.
That is correct.
And then
okay.
We separately tell you what the margin would have looked like excluding them.
Okay, because I think that was what Jason was saying, was that when you adjust for that stuff, SG&A was actually down versus the first quarter, which I guess I agree with him. That's great, but it's a bit surprising given you added assets into the mix.
The other thing I would add to that is we would traditionally, from a marketing investment standpoint, we would have higher investments in the first quarter versus the second quarter, and so that's accounting for some of that decline in operating expense, SG&A expense.
Okay. All right, great. Thanks.
There are no further questions at this time.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for your continued interest in Sequel. We appreciate it, and have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you for participating in today's conference call. You may now disconnect.